League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
No one warned us. No one said you were going to lose both engines at a lower altitude than any jet in history.
Simulations showed that you could make it back to the airport.
Not possible. I felt it go.
From director Clint Eastwood, critics are calling it a triumph. 5 stars.
Brace for impact.
What if I didn't get this wrong? What if I endangered the lives of all those passengers?
People call you a hero.
I don't feel like a hero.
Sully, Miracle on the Hudson. In cinemas December 2nd. Certificate 12A.
Okay, right. Let us begin. Welcome to episode 36 of the Tottenham Way podcast. As usual, Dan Kilpatrick. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, mate.
Joining us this week, or joining us and then leaving again, is Ben Lewis.
Hello.
Ben, sit down, mate.
Just checking my phone's on silent.
That's fine. Ben, returning after the... You did the Arsenal preview with Harry Sherlock.
Yeah, it was after when he said we could win the league and we were kind of sniggered.
Yeah.
It was after we beat Villa.
What a visionary.
Well, yeah, fair play to him. In before Jim, definitely.
Yeah.
And also with us, a return of Adam Nathan. Adam, your fourth go?
Third,
so match ball episode.
Can't wait, signed by the whole team.
Oh, I should have done that. Yeah.
No, we have to do that for Jim, and we'll have to do
that
that's
Ollie
true.
Yeah, no, we're not doing that.
A bit strapped for cash at the moment.
Yeah, we're not doing that. Maybe one of those old footballs you got at school, Fates, the floaters.
I'll dig something out of my shed or something.
Some dilapidated.
Nothing new.
I'm less interested now.
Yeah. Thanks for coming down, guys.
We've come to Adam. We're in his living room. They don't come anywhere.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Thank us for coming up.
Thanks, me.
It's one way of putting it.
The dark heart of North London.
Yeah. I imagine that. It would have been easier to get to Spain, I think.
Probably. I have thought we'd replicate the atmosphere, but I've got a crowd outside to clap at some point.
Oh, nice.
And I've got the neighbour coming in with a pint of Guinness about halfway through, look around, look the world, and then walk out, just sort of recreate the atmosphere of the pub.
Do you have a really loud, obnoxious Cockney lady as well that screams at people?
The neighbour has her moments, so we'll give it a go.
We turfed out of the pub this week, so Adam's very kindly offered his flat. To record. This is now the third home pod that we've done. We've done Dan's, we've done mine, and now, you're in a privileged position. How do you feel?
Well, I was going to say, if that's not an upgrade from a plastic match ball to a...
Yeah.
Even, like, I don't know, one of the half leather ones.
That's one of the ones in Sports Direct, sort of by the entrance.
Yeah, 3 for 10.
After a while, you just peel off the panels really easily.
Like that school ball where the balloon was like coming through one of the leather panels.
Yeah, the orange.
And you know it's nearly the end.
Right, okay, let's get going.
Hold on.
You
were about to mug them off. And then
I wasn't going to mug them off because I'm still not 100% sure how it works, but you two have I was going to say a prior relationship, but that it conjures different images. But you kind of know each other through... How does it work? How does it work between you and Ben, Adam and Ben?
I mean, I could kind of just go through the story whereby I've been out with my girlfriend now for 4.5 years. She moved down to London this year for a year over the summer. And I was away in August and she's going to her family for Friday night dinner. And I get a call after dinner and she says, "Oh, you won't believe who I've just had dinner with." I said... "What do you mean?" She goes, "Oh, someone who knows you from Twitter." I said, "Oh, God. What's he say?"
The worst thing anyone could say to you. Yeah. I met someone that knows you on Twitter.
And it transpired that you guys are cousins.
Yeah.
I didn't follow you at the time. I kind of remembered you from our run-ins over
AVB.
I've been
blocked by you, actually.
I don't think you're blocked. I think you're unfollowed and muted.
Nearly.
But Yeah, we weren't mates anyway, but it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of
that AVB era was tough for us, yeah. You'd have to say.
Wait, so you didn't really know, you don't really know your cousin very well. She's a distant cousin.
Third or fourth cousin.
Right, okay. Less funny. I was hoping it was more of an awkward situation.
It's still quite funny explore. To have someone. I've met someone, I'm related to somebody that you know and have blocked or done everything but.
I know her so little that before she came to the dinner, I looked her up on Facebook to see who was coming over, and then I saw a picture of Ben, thinking, that's where this link is.
Well, this is an intervention in your... We wanted to get you two together to sit down and thrash this out. We're not talking about Tottenham today. We're going to talk about how your early Twitter hatred.
That will help us, I reckon.
Mm. All right, let's talk about Spurs. So we had Borussia Dortmund on Thursday. The lineup was a big, quite a big talking point again. Five changes before and after. Dan, you wrote the running order for this. So could you want to clarify what before and after means?
It means that they played the same team for Villa and for Bournemouth. So there were five changes from both those teams for the Dortmund game in between.
Right, okay. Oh, I see.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So six players played all three games.
Right, okay. And specifically you said about Dier and Ali starting against Dortmund as well.
I kind of feel that the Dortmund game seems to already be in the distant past and I'm not overly concerned about it. But at the time, there was quite a lot of debate about whether Dier and Ali should have started that game. And I know that Adam and I were both of the opinion that risking Dier seemed quite risky. That's a better word. Because it was a meaningless game. We weren't going to progress. A 3-0 down against one of the top sides in Europe, I don't think we had a chance in hell. And I thought it was a slightly strange move to play Dier. Less so Ali, given that Eriksen and Dembele were rested. But it struck me as a bit strange because he lose him and I think our title dream is over.
Mm. What do you guys think?
I completely agree. Like, it would have made sense if we were still in the tie, but I was expecting as weak a team as possible to not include any kind of unknown quantities. So maybe the centre-back sort of played and thought we might see a final run out for Bentaleb before we kind of
see
the back of him.
Yeah,
but,
before his big move.
Yeah, I thought we'd go as weak as possible. I was surprised to not see Onuma in there. And he definitely, I mean, he feels like he's got away with it now, but when I saw Dier limping around in like the 85th minute, I was thinking, oh, here we go.
Yeah, I had to follow it on Twitter, which is awful. Yeah. like from a hospital waiting room as well. And it was like the most depressing setting ever.
I was about to take the piss out of you for not watching the game.
And remember
the story.
We were 2-0 down, weren't we? Yeah. Before Son got that goal back.
Yeah.
And I was like this. And then somebody put, Dier's picked up a knock, holding his groin for the last 5 minutes. We've used all our subs or something like that.
Yeah,
just like this is awful. This could be where it all unravels. But he played against Bournemouth, didn't he? Yeah, he was fine.
Yeah, the thing is, it doesn't matter now. It's really a moot point. But yeah, it struck me as odd at the time.
Yeah, he played 90 minutes against Bournemouth as well, didn't he, Dier?
No, he came off
in the last, very last.
Actually, game. That's something to come on to later. But I was quite surprised he stayed on as long as he did, given the yellow card issue.
Yeah,
he's one away from a 2-game suspension, and he's got to get through the Liverpool and United games before that's wiped. So as soon as we went 3-0 up, I thought he was going to be pulled off, but actually he lasted till about the 80th minute, didn't he?
I think it was a bit later than that. I think he was sure he was like the last.
Yeah, I think it was literally the end.
Yeah,
it was the first
90 minutes.
It almost seems with that he lacks attention to detail, because you'd think that 3-0 get him off, but there's no way it is that, because he's meticulous in his planning. And you almost think now that he's got such confidence in his players to manage themselves on the pitch, that instead of me as a manager being like a father and saying, you've got to come off because we need to protect you, it's like, no, I'm going to trust you, do what you've been doing all season and we'll get through it. And in a way, you don't what these refs can give you a yellow card for, but it's quite nice to see him having the confidence in his players, because there's no way they didn't all know what the deal was. With the yellow cards.
I completely agree. Carroll came on and he was warming up on about the 65th.
Yeah.
And I thought, here we go, Dier straight off. And he replaced Ali. And at that point, I thought, he obviously knows about this and he's just trusting Dier not to get a booking.
Yeah.
Because if he got a booking in that game at 3-0 up,
big problems.
How Twitter.
What do we do? Would not have been a happy place.
No. Everyone in the ground, like every time Dyer got near anyone in the second half, was just thinking, don't slide in. Yeah. And then he did slide in the box in like the 85th minute and made a good tackle. And you're just thinking,
it feels like an elongated so Palacios. Like Palacios, yeah. By the second half, you were constantly like, don't slide in now, not now. And it, with Dyer, we've had that for about four games now. So let's go back to Dortmund. We're basically just outclassed, weren't we, over two legs?
Yeah, no, I think our first team would have given them a good game over two legs. We may well have gone out. But for English clubs, I know it's a bit sort of Little England to say. It is a nightmare of a competition to be in if you're trying to do other things in the league as well. Dortmund are, 19 points clear of third?
Mm.
And 6 points off Bayern, who are probably not going to let that slip. They can afford to throw all their eggs into the basket. If we hadn't beaten Villa and Bournemouth, that would have been disastrous.
Mm.
So I'm not a fan of the Europa League anyway, and I was happy to chuck it. I mean, I got quite a lot of stick in the Dortmund game in the first leg, saying, I don't know why the team is as strong as it is in Dortmund, because we've got bigger fish to fry. You know, if you're gonna half chuck it, fully chuck it, as opposed to playing Alderweireld and Loris.
There's a case that Pochettino knew he was going to lose that game in Germany, but you always have to answer awkward questions if you get an absolute pasting. Yeah. I mean, there were some awkward questions at 5-1 aggregate defeat. There were some awkward questions at 3-0 defeat in Germany, but if we're losing that 7-8-9-0, it does really hit confidence. And that's when he has to really kind of face the music. So I wasn't unhappy with the strength of the two teams, with the exception of Dyer playing the second leg.
Yeah, there's only a certain amount of things that we can do with Vertonghen injured and Dyer being, if he was going to be rested, or if he wasn't going to play in that central defensive midfield, you'd want him rested rather than playing centre-back, wouldn't you? So, in terms of Alderweireld, because the point that you've brought up is about the squad in general.
Yeah, I do think that the games, they suggested that the squad isn't perhaps as strong as we thought, given that next season we're going to be competing in the Champions League, where you can't really weaken your team.
Mm.
You just can't make five changes midweek because you'll get absolutely stuffed and humiliated.
Mm.
And we should be going for the title again next season, you'd have thought. So it struck me that when Davis went off...
Ben smiled at that. Well, oh, how we sneaked.
Yeah, I mean,
Harry,
who knows? Yeah. It struck me that when Davis went off, nothing really changed, because we're very strong in the fullback positions and he's got two players... There isn't a lot between them in both sides, but we really missed Dembele in midfield. I thought we really missed Ali in the first leg. We really missed Eriksen in the second leg. And these guys, their replacements are nowhere near their level at the moment. So there are definitely areas where we can upgrade. And I think the Dortmund game kind of made that clear.
Yeah.
I think he did actually, he hinted at that, I think, in the post-match press conference after the second leg as well, about how there was definitely something about how he might have learnt things over these games or whatever, about the squad or whatever. And he kind of left it at that because he doesn't really give anything away. But I do think...
But that's quite telling for Pochettino. That is really... He never says anything.
No, yeah.
That, you know, particularly kind of that forthright. But that is...
I can't imagine he's looking at that central midfield backup option and thinking that we're good to go with that next season.
Next season, if we've got Arsenal... a midweek Champions League game against anyone, and then followed by Chelsea, for instance, and he wants to give Dyer and Dembele a rest midweek, he can't really play. And let's assume that Bentaleb's finished. No. He can't really be putting in Mason and Carroll again. It's not strong enough. We'll get turned over.
I think the idea, though, is surely that those type of players, or that sort of backup players, would be playing the games against the likes of Villa. Like, the better team... But then you have to, because not everyone, even the best teams in the world, are not going to be able to play their full strength 11 in 50-55 games.
Yeah, but
the
point is, the best teams in the world have better backups than what's.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. that's what I was going to say. Yeah. But I do think you can get away with maybe one of the two, but we are going to need that certain step up for the bench. Our bench throughout the season, even when we've had a full strength squad to pick from, our bench has always been pretty poor, I think.
Apart from Chadley, I can't think of a sub that we've made.
Mate Chadley.
Well, I'm not a fan of Chadley, obviously. Well, as a starter, I think he's an abomination. But as a sub to score a goal, he can do a decent job. But apart from bringing him on as a plan B, I can't think of a sub that's made our team better in the second half of the season.
I can think of plenty, actually.
What, an in-game sub?
Ali against Watford.
Chadley against...
I should backtrack. When our first team has been playing, so when you've got the team from yesterday, for example, I don't think that we really have made changes to that team and been better.
Lamella came on against City and got an assist. Son's done it a couple of times. I think Palace
against Watford.
Ali did it against Watford. So, but those guys, there's not a lot between them for a starting place. So I know what you're getting at.
Like what against?
There's no kind of wild card game changer. No. Who's normally a sub. And often makes an impact.
Yeah, I mean, in the Arsenal game, he brought Mason on for Lamella, and we really lost it. Mm. I think, actually, Mason is going to have a bit of a crisis of position identity at the minute, because I don't think he looks a centre midfielder in the Pochettino system. He's a bit too much of a headless chicken, which last year was great when we needed someone to get stuck in. But now, I think bringing on Mason, I'd rather see him playing behind the striker and doing a Lamella-ish job of ratting around and winning the ball back, then pushing Dembele forward and then having Dier and Mason next to each other, because they just left huge gaps. I don't think he's got the positional discipline to do that. I think we probably need 4 or 5 players in the summer, but they're all going to be of a standard that not necessarily starting, but good enough to replace starters.
We need 5 Kevin Vimmers,
yeah,
basically, in various positions. Ones that are going to cost us no more than 5-6 million, unless the right player comes along for more, but ones that will sit and basically train for 4 months to get up to speed, and then you've got a player that's ready to step in at any time. I mean, we need 2 replacements, and Dyer's 2 of them, isn't he, in a way? Like, you need central defensive and you need right-sided central defender.
Yeah.
That's
an interesting one, though, because I'm not convinced. The centre-back, I think, would be an interesting one in the summer, because a lot of people probably think we should buy one, but I'd be very I wouldn't be very surprised if we don't.
Do you think we're more likely to go defensive midfielder to move Dier back?
I think Dier will be seen as like a fourth choice if need be. I mean, we've used 3 centre-backs all season.
Mm.
And he'll probably look at that and think that we can...
But Alderweireld's played every
game. We've been very lucky there.
He's missed less.
But he'll think that if we have a backup...
I think we'll buy one. It depends if Carter Vickers can step up. But it's probably a different discussion for a different time.
It's interesting. Poch and Ali both spoke about learning something from the tie. What did we actually learn then? Unless we've already said it. Have we already sort of gone over everything that we could possibly have learned?
Yeah, I think we know that we probably learned that we need a few more players, and when we're playing the likes of Dortmund every week, every European game next season, we can't really afford to be playing the likes of Mason and Carroll side by side. I think that's what I learned from the tie anyway.
Probably let the Bentaleb's out.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, there's a lot to be said about somebody
and
not
he's injured for the rest of the season now as well.
Is that a party line or...?
The club said he's going to be assessed this week. That's the off the
record.
What
happened to...
He got injured in the under-21 game. I don't know at the moment whether it's a... he's out for the season, or whether it's like a cover, like, oh, he's out for the season.
The old Adebayor.
I don't know, but he won't play again this season. No chance.
Might be it then, isn't it, really?
Fit enough to be sold?
Yeah.
I think so.
Good God.
I don't know, I mean, I could see it being... The thing about Bentaleb is he's got a long contract and he's young, so Levy's not going to sell him cheaply. He's going to want 15 million, and his value's dropped so much in the past year. I could see it being, if he does try and force a move, I can't see many clubs paying what Spurs would want.
No.
I could well imagine him starting next season in a similar position.
Ironically,
to the one he's in now.
We probably all thought that this time last year Dembele is probably going to get sold in the summer. And so you sort of hope that they can have that. They must have had a chat, Pochettino and Dembele, last year around this time, because he played the last game of the season and then started every game this season pretty much. And there must have been just some sort of conversation that they sat down and just hacked it out. And funny enough, Bentaleb is probably the player that we could really use to come good as a Dembele replacement. Because again, we can't play Dembele every game. And I don't think Bentaleb is necessarily a holding midfielder. I don't think he's got that awareness. And I think he's got a lovely touch. He's a decent passer. And being left-footed, you could easily see him filling in for Dembele in the way he plays in some games.
Yeah, that's He's going to be like,
I don't know, really annoying.
But if he does go, and considering the level we're at, and considering the level that Man United are at, it's like the Pogba situation of just.
If he gets his head down.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously something beyond football as to why he's not playing for us.
Yeah.
But he is as good as Tom Carroll and Ryan Mason, based on what he showed last season.
Yeah.
There's something that's gone on there, and it is what it is, but we just hope that he doesn't turn into a really, really good player somewhere else, I guess.
The thing is, though, we've all been very on board with Poch's kind of ruthless shaping and culling of the squad, because there's been nothing to complain about. He's been getting rid of Paulinho's and Soldado and Kyle Norton, and no one's had any complaints about that. But
a lot of people were angry about Aaron Lennon going.
Lennon was arguably the one, but that's completely absurd anger, in my opinion. But there was always going to be casualties that were going to be hard to take, I think. That was clear from the start. And if Bentaleb goes, for the sake of the greater good, I think he'll be the first one where a majority of people possibly will feel that it was a bad decision. But you're either on board with Pochettino or you're not, and I think you've got to be all in with him, and this is his way. Like, if Bentaleb's obviously shown something behind the scenes that he's not happy about, and he's just not going to stand for it.
Yeah, I thought at the beginning of the season, when, you know, there was the rumour about the contract, and that is his agent his brother or his brother's?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's some sort of family thing. He doesn't feel like he has a proper agent.
And I thought maybe the first, because he got injured, didn't he, quite early on in the season, when he struggled to get back, I think partly because of the form of our midfielders that were playing in his stead, but also I thought Pochettino was maybe sending a message, in the same way as I think that making Cabal captain was a political move so we could drop him. I thought that the Bentaleb situation was quite similar, in that you're not just walking back into this team, but we've got to the point where we do have injuries and we do have, you know, tired legs, and in particularly in position where he plays, and he's quite clearly fit and it's still not happening. So it's gone beyond that point of being just a political move or just trying to make a little bit of an example of him, not particularly for anyone else apart from Bentaleb himself. We've gone past that stage, haven't we? So, and if he's not going to get another minute this season, well, I think we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah,
it's interesting. It is interesting.
He's either going to go one of two ways. He's going to try and force his way out of the club and it's going to get messy, or clean break at the end of the season, he gets his head down and it's a fresh start in pre-season.
Yeah.
Which presumably everyone wants, the latter of the options. Yeah. Because last year, if you said to me that Bentaleb would be leaving next summer, I would have been tearing my hair out. Yeah. I mean, Kane didn't outperform Bentaleb last year for me in the second half of the season. Like the cup final, Arsenal at home, Chelsea at home in the first season. He dominated these midfields. And this is when like Matic was at his peak. Mm. He was brilliant. And to think that it can all change in a year is terrible.
That's depressing. Let's finish on Alderweireld because it was the one sort of shining light in the Dortmund game, I think. But also he had a good game against Bournemouth as well. The double tackle and then the I don't know what you call that turn
pirouette
on the edge of his own box to get away from an onrushing attacker. Signing of the season, player of the season for me. I mean, Kane has been unbelievable, but he's almost kind of carried on from where he left off last season. Alderweireld just walks into that team, just bossed everything, everything. I'd go for player of the season. Anyone disagree?
No.
One of those players that there's nothing to say about him because it's just 10 out of 10 across the board, isn't it?
Best since King, probably for a long time before King as well.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen a centre-back kind of cheered on every tackle like he was against Dortmund since King. It was just like, because it wasn't just that double tackle in turn. There was one where the guy was completely away and Alderweireld was just like sprinting, and I've never seen him so quick.
Yeah.
He caught up with Aubameyang, I think, and just made a great challenge, and everyone just, the whole ground just stood up and started cheering a tackle. It's just brilliant.
He's great. He's good as well to just think that you don't notice him that much. Like, you notice him because of all the work that he does, but he's not that, I think, when people like John Terry have a good performance, or what people call a good performance, you notice him because he's like dominating in the air and everything. Alderweireld just does everything simple, and if it's,
I don't know, I really do notice Alderweireld.
But do you reckon people from the outside? He hasn't got a chance of player of the season because people outside will never go.
I almost notice what he does on the. He's such a good passer that I notice what he does on the ball. I noticed that against Bournemouth a lot. He really stood out for me because he was just spraying these passes all over the place. I think he's got that king quality as well of making whoever he's playing with so much better. Mm. Like, I do rate them. That pass to Ali for Kane's second goal on Sunday was brilliant, but I can't help but feel that a lot of Wimmer's success has been down to the fact he's playing next to Alderweireld.
Mm.
And it gives me confidence for someone like Carter Vickers, who could come in and play next to him and possibly look really solid.
How old is Alderweireld? Is he 27?
26 or 27, yeah.
That's ridiculous. And we picked him up for...
12 million.
12 million or something? It's unbelievable. If we get three or four seasons out of him.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me to see the club trying to markedly make more of a thing of him, because he's had, what, four or five clubs now already?
Mm.
And so I just worry slightly that he might be a bit of a guy who needs to find a home. And I hope that they're doing everything they can to make it feel like this is his club now. Because you don't hear that much from him. He does the odd snippet. He's quite reclusive, clearly, in the sense of how often we hear from Mason and Kane and Dyer and Ali. You see all the videos. Mm. There's not that much of that with Toby. So I hope that he is made, you know, a real part of it, and he can settle. Because, yeah, I mean, 4 or 5 years out of a player like that would be massive.
Mm. I mean, the fact that he plays every game, as we said, he must feel a big part of what's happened this season.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that the Dortmund game, it was really a nothing game from a Spurs perspective, but I feel like a lot of people, certainly, maybe a lot of people in the media, just an impression I picked up, that they've sort of, people who don't watch Spurs regularly, that game sort of opened their eyes to how good he is. Because, yes, Aubameyang scored twice and was brilliant and got the better of us, but Alderweireld gave him a really, really good battle in those two, like, saving tackles, as well as his all-round game. I think people were like, okay, I didn't quite realise how good he's been for Tottenham. Yeah. But for us, that was just another great performance from him.
Speaking of sort of saving tackles, and there was another tackle, it was against Bournemouth. But it wasn't Alderweireld, it was Harry Kane in his own box, in his own 6-yard box. But let's talk about what he does at the other end of the pitch. Segway.
Lovely segue.
As you know, on the Tottenham way, we have to do the segue and then make reference to the segue to make sure it lands with everyone. And, so Harry Kane, let's just talk about him, because if you can gush about Alderweireld, you can talk about Kane all day. We had the trust on last week, and Martin Cloke was saying that he was the best. Did he say he was the best that he's seen, or
he
up there?
He said he was up there with Archibald, Crooks, Chivers.
This is just a matter of course now, isn't it? The goals that he scores, the different type of goals, and the performances that he's putting in. It's 9-10 out of 10 every single game. Dan, you've put here that you've got statistics on Kane.
Yeah, I didn't write them all down. After Sunday, there were just loads of stats popping up. Mm. Like, he's now one of only 5 Englishmen to score 20 plus goals in consecutive Premier League seasons, and only one of 2 since 2000. Since the start of last season, no one scored more goals in the Premier League than him. He's on 42, and so is Aguero since the start of last season. He's the first Spurs player since Chivers in 1971 to score 20 plus goals in consecutive seasons. He's obviously top scorer in the league by 2 goals. He's on course to be the first Englishman to win the Golden Boot since 2000. There's loads. There's more.
Yeah.
He's just a phenomenon.
He is. Yeah.
He's 22.
Yeah, just exactly. And everyone still needs to remember that he was utter shit.
Yeah.
He was utter shit. And this was not. I mean, we didn't see a lot of him, but he went on loan to Norwich, and I saw him in a couple of games, and he couldn't even run, let alone finish. Like, he was awful.
He'd missed 2 penalties for us before he even scored for us, hadn't he?
Mm.
And then against Hearts and Shamrock Rovers. Yeah. And the guy, he looked like he couldn't stay on his own feet.
He looked like, he was almost a joke. If he'd have played more, but yeah, well, thank God that we actually stuck with him. But
nothing we did.
No,
thank God for Potts.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. That is fair. His partnership with Ali's starting to bloom, though, isn't it? What do you guys think of, in terms of partnerships that we've had previously? How do you feel about Ali and Kane?
There just seems to be such a good understanding that Ali is just, when I watch Ali, I think he's one of those players where if you're there live versus on TV, you just see how intelligent he is in his movement and everything. Mm. He's, to think how young he is, the way that he moves about and creates space for Kane to run into, and just the way he finds that pocket of space. Like, okay, it's a great pass from Vimy yesterday, but Ali's picking up the ball with no one within 5 yards of him in the middle of the opposition's half, and he's ready to play that pass straight away, things like that. And there really is something going on between those two. And it's strange to think that Eriksen's been playing behind Kane now for over a year, and I've never really felt like, oh, Eriksen's picked up the ball and he's going to find Kane now. I've never really seen that. And Ali's not even necessarily playing at number 10 regularly. He's kind of rotated between the left and the middle. And
yeah,
he's got that link with Kane really strong.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
Yeah. I think with the Eriksen stuff, just quickly, it's interesting. So you don't ever feel like he's going to be...
I don't think he has something with Kane. I really like him as a player, and I think he's really important for us. But I've never felt like there's anything between him and Kane.
But that you've got almost the partnership between Ali and Kane is almost like a front two, and then Eriksen just passes around behind.
I think it's another stat. I need to check this one, but I think it's the most regular assist to goal scorer combo in the whole Premier League.
Wow!
So he's assisted 7 Kane goals.
Okay,
it's more than any other combination.
It's for the Euros as well. I mean,
yeah, it's great news for England. I mean, Roy will fuck it up.
Yeah,
I mean, it's potentially good news for him.
Do we have anything more to add on the Bournemouth game? Because we've got a good discussion coming up.
Not right.
It was fairly routine.
It was a pretty. I mean, we scored after 44 seconds, and there was a kind of weird nervous tension around the game, and it comes of playing after Leicester, and we'd have to get used to that feeling, I imagine. But as soon as we scored, it just dissipated, and it was a nice place to be, and it was a really, really good performance.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the Leicester situation, because it's becoming, as weeks go on and you know, we're not getting any closer to them, how do you feel, we'll round table this, how do you feel about finishing second to Leicester City on 38 games, 90 minutes done, and it's at Newcastle when we finish second and it's to Leicester City? How do you feel, like, in context and in a wider context?
My blood is boiling, but when we were drawing with Sunderland early on in the season before Mason scored, I didn't even think we were coming in the top half, because there just didn't seem like there was anything there. So if we come second, that is amazing, and it's by far the best season any of us have ever seen. So to those ends, that would be great. I don't know what to say about Leicester. I'm trying to argue at people about Leicester just because it's calming me down to just shout about them. They scored 6 goals in 5 games and picked up 13 points.
It's very Chelsea.
And the one that they scored 2 in, they only got a draw. I mean, I don't know what to say. You have to respect it. But you just have to hope that at some point 1-0 will become 1-1, because Zaha isn't going to trip over his own feet at the back post and he'll score, or Sim de Jong or whatever his name is will not miss, or Cameron Jerome won't miss the header. You just got to hope that at some point the 1-0 becomes 1-1. More enough times as we need, but I don't know what to say about that, about them, because, well, there. I don't know what to say.
Incredulity.
It is. Completely speechless.
And we've all sort of edged away from you on the sofa. Just wanted to
explode. You better move on, because I'm going to lose it. It is an underlying of respect, but there's as much rage as there is respect, just because I don't understand what's happening.
That's at Leicester, not us.
At Leicester. Yeah. We are brilliant.
Yeah.
And whatever happens this year, it's been the most fun you could ever have. I try and go to as many games as I can, home and away. It's been absolutely brilliant. And it's so nice to have a nice week Monday to Friday, because you've won on the Saturday, time after time after time.
Or at least not lost 6-0.
Yeah. And that, you know, all we really want is to just feel happy about Spurs.
Yeah.
And so, to that extent, it's great, but it's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Ben?
So, I'm going to try not to praise Leicester, because on the way home from the game yesterday, there's this guy who rings up 606, a Spurs fan, and he gets signed. This just sums up so much of the feeling in the country at the moment, which I think has been created by this great Leicester story that the media absolutely love. And it is a great story, but that's as far as I'm going to praise them. He calls up and goes, yeah, we're having a great season, but I've got to be honest, if Leicester win the league, I'll put my hands up. I'm very happy for Leicester to win the league and us to come second. It just made me so angry.
Yeah, you're so wrong.
Actual Spurs fans feel like that. We're not like United, and maybe not United now. We're not like Chelsea and we know we're going to win the league in the next 10 years. We're Tottenham and we haven't won it for 55 and this is an incredible chance and you're sitting there saying you don't mind if we come second when we're 5 points off top. It just really annoys me. So looking at the overall season, if we come second, it's pretty incredible because I think we're definitely ahead of schedule. It doesn't feel like a fluke season. It feels like we're ahead of the game when really we're still going to continue to improve next season, even if we don't pick up the same number of points. And it's just a really exciting time, I think.
I enjoy being the only set supporters that are really pissed off with Leicester. Maybe Arsenal, but everyone else is like, oh, we've been a bit crap this year. Go on, you can do it. But we're like, no! It's so annoying.
I've just got this horrible image of the Chelsea fans celebrating on the last day of the season.
You know it's going to happen.
As Leicester lift the trophy at Stamford Bridge. It's just going to be horrendous.
There'll be 42,000 pairs of Ranieri glasses. They'll all be supporting Leicester.
Yeah. Dan, follow that, mate.
It would be almost be more bittersweet if Leicester pip us to the title than almost anyone else, really. I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous to say. Obviously, I'd prefer to come second to Leicester than I would to, say, Arsenal or Chelsea. But there's another stat for you. If Spurs finish second and Leicester win the league, it'll be the first time in 35 years anyone's finished above United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal and City and still not won the league. I mean, how Spurs is that?
Yeah, so Spurs.
And I won't be able to not look back at the season and think, oh, little old Leicester won it and we didn't and think that this might have been our year. So it will be almost more bittersweet than if, say, City won it or Chelsea won it or United won it, where you could justify that by saying, well, they have so much more money than us.
Yeah.
They've got the resources. There's not much we could have done. But when it is like little old Leicester, you think, well, it didn't have anything we don't have. They just got more points than us over the course of the season.
Yeah, I think for me, when I see people annoyed at us for only being second, I get, that's what annoys me. It's like we're fine in what we're doing is fine. It's just that we've got another team that has basically been on form since March last season. So they've been on form for a year, and it's just that last year their objective was to avoid relegation, which they did at ease. And then this year they've just carried on, and you know they might never stop. They might just go and win everything.
I think it's quite right that people say like Adam says, you got to look at the context of where we were. And I'm seeing a lot of people in the press as well as amongst fans kind of rewriting history and saying, "Oh, well, Spurs were always likely to improve on last season's fifth place finish." I've seen that in the Standard. I saw that in the Guardian. It's like, no, that's not true.
Yeah.
A lot of people, as Adam says, expect us to finish like eighth or below. So the fact that we are where we are is amazing, but then I would also say by the same token, no one would have expected us to be 6 points behind Leicester in March, so you can kind of argue it both ways, really. Obviously this season's been amazing, incredible, even if we royally fuck it up in the last seven games, but there is a part of me that just feels like it's just our fate.
You should never be happy with second. It doesn't matter how.
Yeah, that should be a
Pochettino mantra.
I feel maybe I'm saying, oh, it's tougher because it's Leicester. But in fact, once you're involved in a title race, it's always going to be gutting to come second, no matter what your target was at the beginning of the season, because you revise those targets and you dream of the title.
One thing I can't have is, and it seems to be coming from Liverpool fans specifically,
shock.
I don't
know what you're going to say.
But
it's still.
I'm surprised as you are how obnoxious they're being. But it's Twitter, so it's obviously it gives a mouth to idiots. but they're starting. They're already having a pop. Like, you're going to be crap next year. We're going to be so much better. We've got Klopp. You're losing the league to Leicester City. How does it feel? It's like, well, a little bit better than being 19 points behind them. So
you must have seen that tweet, which was after the draw was made, obviously, everyone's making the comparison between how we did against Dortmund and how Liverpool are going to do. And this guy goes, Spurs don't have a better team than us, and they're not better than us. They're just more consistent. And I thought, so we're just better at winning football matches, basically.
Yeah,
it's just strange.
Does that not sum up Liverpool as a football club? Like, That is ridiculous. That is, they're not better than us. They're just thing that makes them better than us. You know, there was tweets. I mean, I was doing a lot of retweeting of people that were writing off Kane in the summer. Like other clubs' fans just like won't get 10 goals next season, and I don't care what anyone says, it's always funny. It's always funny. You don't say things like that without it being expected to be pulled up on it. And one of them said, Kane's rubbish, he's not good enough, and all this. And someone went back and went, well, you know, like, what, why? And he's like, I don't care, he's just average. And he was like, alright, so how much do you think he's worth? And he went, 10 to 15 million. It was like, that sums them up as well. It's just like, they're so average that I will not pay a penny over £15 million for him.
It's quite funny, though, because on that, I think Kane is, if you look back to a year ago, Kane is a much better player now than he was last year. So I think we all probably worried a little bit, even if we wouldn't have tweeted about it, that it may not happen for him. And the first 6 weeks happened, it wasn't quite... But he has just become such a better
even
player.
Even in those 6 weeks, though...
But there was that one game, I thought he was good, and then that Everton game absolutely killed me, I thought. Oh, he's just been really poor today.
What,
Everton at home, that 0-0. And he just looked like he'd lost that ruthless streak that he had last season. Yeah. And you thought, was it all momentum?
Oh, he missed the one-on-one.
He missed the one-on-one. Yeah. Things were bouncing off him. He wasn't challenging for headers like you usually see him do for every ball up to the front and everything. You thought, what's going on
here? That is interesting. Then, 2 seasons in a row, he's only really started scoring in October, November as well. Like, where would we be and he be if he really hit the ground running? It's not a criticism at all. It's just, it's interesting to think of it. We just need
it's
one of
those. It's going to be exactly the same next season. It's going to be flogged in the Euros.
Yeah, we need one of those
Pochettino
wild
actually
card.
Said that his pre-season was basically the first 6 weeks of the season, which explains a lot.
Yeah.
He said that a couple of weeks ago. It's going to be the same. Spurs will start slowly. Next year we probably won't have Kane for the first 6 to 8 weeks because he'll be absolutely fucked.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll buy a striker. Maybe.
Never know.
I wouldn't count on it.
Madness.
Clinton.
Let's. And Jai's got to come back. Let's. International break coming up. We've got. Who've we got? Germany and Holland. Something like that.
Yeah.
Who do we expect to see from us playing in that? Rose.
Rose,
you said
I don't know who it was. One of the journalists said that
it's the guy from the PA. I think it might have been Simon Peach.
Maybe right. said that Rose is Roy's planning to play Rose in both games, which would just be ridiculous. I don't think he's played twice in a week or season.
No, yeah, and it's that just shows a complete lack of cohesion between club and country, doesn't it?
I think it's difficult for Hodge. I'm very much an England fan, and for me, England winning a competition would be right up there with Spurs winning it. I know that's not typical of most football fans, but it is still for me. And I appreciate that he has got to try things out. You know, he probably does need to play Dyer just to check, and he does need to play Rose. He does not need to play Harry Kane.
No.
He is by far the best striker we're going to take to that competition. I don't think that's Spurs bias coming through saying that. He should be a nailed-on starter, and for me, I've said this on Twitter the last couple of weeks, giving Kane a 10-day rest now would be by much better preparation for England than flogging him, giving him 120 minutes against Germany and France, which, you know, there's only so much you can learn. Mm. I wouldn't be annoyed to see Rose playing some because he's not even got a cap for England, has he?
Yeah.
So he does have to play, but you just hope that we get managed in the right way.
Yeah. How
on the plus side, you're Welbeck's in a bit of form. Sturridge is
fit
again.
And it's friendly.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's no
he's
Rooney.
He's played Kane in two.
You'd think that I think that Hodgson would want to take a look at the other strikers as well. I can't see Kane playing 100.
He might. Yeah, I agree with Adam as well. He's the best.
If he did.
Yeah, he's got to preserve one of his best
assets. I could see him getting 60 or 70 in both games. Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Just hope he plays the first game, not the second.
Yeah, I was just about to ask. With Liverpool, is that a
Saturday?
It's a Saturday.
Yeah, 5:30.
Right, late kick. So what, do we know when the England game is the week before? Is it Tuesday or Wednesday?
Not sure.
I don't think it'll be as late as Wednesday. I think they've normally been Friday, Tuesday for the last, certainly the qualifiers.
That's not a disaster then. It still gives us 4 days. I know it's not ideal, but... How do you guys
I mean, the
that?
Ideal thing is Sturridge plays the second game.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
They've got 5 players in the squad as well.
Have they?
Yeah.
So,
how? Who?
No, wait, Henderson.
Lallana,
Hendo pulled out.
Oh, has he? All right, well.
I'm not sure.
I didn't see that. Well, Lallana, Sturridge,
Milner, Lallana,
Klein.
Henderson. three very average midfielders.
And who have we got? Rose, Kane,
Ali,
Dyer,
Walker.
That's a good five-a-side game, that.
Yeah.
The Liverpool game is interesting now because with their loss yesterday, they're not going to get in the Champions League through the league, and they've got Dortmund the Thursday afterwards.
Yeah, it must be, yeah.
Away as well.
Away. So you just wonder if they might give a couple of them
Klopp
the Saturday afternoon off.
Well, won't
for sure.
I'd be shocked if Sturridge plays against us. Because they will want to play him in Dortmund.
Yeah.
And it's not worth risking two games a week if I'm a Liverpool fan.
It'd be nice if Coutinho maybe gets a rest.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll be flying to Brazil and back, presumably, in the week as well.
Possibly, yeah.
I haven't looked at any
Do you guys feel about it? Let's talk about it. Obviously, it's a little way away, and it feels like, I mean, in the context of our season, we feel like we get a bit of momentum back, and then now it feels like we've got about 3 years to wait for our next Premier League game. So how do you guys feel about Anfield, somewhere we've won? I think we've only won there once in like 20 years.
I feel horrible about it.
And that was a meaningless last game of the season. Van der Vaart volley. Do you remember that? What a goal that was. Do you think it's going to be...
I don't know. I mean, yeah, a lot will depend on the international break, how things are looking in 10 days' time. But right now, I don't feel good about that game, just because we've got such a horrible record there. They are a team that can really hurt you, and they do score a lot of goals. They've obviously got some cracks under the surface that Southampton exploited and that Tottenham are more than capable of exploiting. Mm. But it just has a sort of feel of... Feels a bit like that West Ham game where
I don't feel
just had a little bit of an ominous feeling about it
for weeks beforehand, but I don't have quite.
I think it's because my most obnoxious friends are Liverpool fans.
Most obnoxious
and most
people.
My most deluded and obnoxious football supporting friends support Liverpool, obviously.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't bear if they ended our title challenge, which would happen if we lost and Leicester beat Saints at home.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So it's not one I can pretty bear losing.
I mean, if Balotelli scored against us last year, then all bets are off for
Benteke is massively off form, and if Sturridge isn't playing, he's likely to. He's going to be Benteke that starts.
Yeah, we might have the Tongan back. It'd be interesting to see if he
would
gets
you put him in?
Straight in.
Yeah.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, so would I.
Especially against them. They can exploit. I think we've seen a few examples, and luckily they haven't. Nobody's actually taken advantage of it. But teams are trying to isolate Wimmer at the moment, because if you can get a run on him with a bit of pace, he is there for the taking.
That's fair.
And Vertonghen is not quick, but much more mobile.
And like that's I said, fair. I think Wimmer's been great.
Yeah.
And I think he's such a find. It's amazing. But Vertonghen's a class above. And if he's fit,
yeah,
he should play.
Yeah.
Mm.
If there's any element of risk, do you think a
95%
Vertonghen is better than 100% Wimmer? Are we that sort of team that can get away with that?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know. I'm sort of thinking at it in a Football Manager. So if I had Vertonghen on 95% free,
he's not a red injury.
If he had an orange injury, I wouldn't play him. If he was just 95%, I'd play him.
Ben, what do you think that?
About Liverpool.
Liverpool. The game in general.
I don't know. I'm not as worried as I was about West Ham. West Ham, I just really didn't think we were going to win until about an hour before the game, and I just decided we were going to win, and that went well. I feel like we need to get through the first half hour, because they're going to come out and run like nutters, as they always do. And if we get through that, if we get to half time, we're not losing, I'd be quite confident.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, let's go on to, well, I was going to say listener questions, but it's just questions. Because Dan, you went out for listener questions.
What did you say, Adam? There was one good one you spotted.
Somebody said about what your favourite goal has been this season.
Okay.
And why?
Yeah, let's do
which
that.
Isn't a bad
sorry,
yeah,
whoever you are, I can't remember. Echo of Glory. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Good follow.
Let's do that, and then your question, which is quite good.
Okay.
Can we leave out Ali, because it's clearly the best goal this season? Is it best or
favourite?
We did this a few weeks ago, and I said Mason because I could get rid of my beard.
Oh yeah,
that was symbolic. But it'd be good to get a couple more.
I can't remember what I said.
I mean, Kane against Arsenal, you might as well take out the equation as well, because that was just, I mean, it caused a storm.
Yeah,
it was such a good, an actual storm happened because that goal was so
that's
good.
True.
So
Kane's
the goal that Kane scored that sealed the win at home against Aston Villa, 3-1.
top corner.
Oh yeah, what a counter.
It was about 20 passes, and my favourite goal of all time is when you score in injury time to give yourself a 2-goal lead. Just because it's like you're celebrating the win and the goal at the same time. Yeah. And my mate who sits behind me said he's never seen a happier face than mine when I turn around to celebrate. So that definitely was, and I think at that point Spurs had really arrived. It was middle of November. Dembele was running the show.
I was on a date. That was when I took.
Oh yeah, it was. On the date.
she enjoyed it.
Yeah.
All the more reason for
it. Never seen her since.
Free ticket, mate. That's all it was.
Yeah, I'm having that goal.
Yeah, I know you want to take it out of the equation, but the Ali goal, I think. Just ignoring how ridiculously good it was.
We took it out of the equation.
No, because you wanted to take it out of the equation because it was so good. And I'm saying that it was obscenely enjoyable.
Too good, yeah.
Because we were 1-1 in the 80th minute at Palace.
That is true. I don't give it enough credit for what it meant in just a purely score sheet sense rather than aesthetic.
Well, it wasn't just... It was like the fact that it was such an outrageous goal added to the fact that we were going into the lead with 10 minutes to go in a game where we really struggled.
That's fair.
So I'm still sticking by that, even if you wanted to take it out of the question.
Ben's broken the rules.
I've not seen an away end like that. For that,
what,
that early goal, it just people just running in any direction they could. It was one of those where you know when you've got like nervous energy and you've got to run it out. It was like that. So people just thought we're gonna charge into each other as hard as we can because we're all too excited.
and
standing on the spot isn't gonna cut it.
Oh, I love it, Dan. Do you have a favourite goal?
I'm struggling to think. If there's no Ali or no Kane, I think in terms of relieving the tension, Chadley's against Swansea. I know it was wasn't a very special goal, but
I remember it. It
was Walker drilled it in and he scored. But it was that game where Fabianski.
Oh, we were 1-0 down.
Yeah. Where Fabianski was just brilliant, and in fact Rose's against Swansea as well, because Fabianski was amazing in it, and it felt like it was going to be one of those old school Tottenham games where we just battered them. And lost 1-0. And again, it was recently enough that would have seriously dented our title hopes, and it was kind of a must-win game at that point. And just as soon as he scored that, I think the whole of the lane knew we were going to win.
Yeah.
And it was a really, really good atmosphere, and it was a really
that's a great
goal.
It's my favourite game of the season.
Well, at Swansea.
We were just so
really
brilliant
good.
For the whole game.
Yeah. And late shout for Dembele at home to Anderlecht.
Oh yeah! Oh,
what a
great
goal!
Yeah,
was that his stoppage right time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right foot, half volley, just
Europa League,
straight leg though. Yeah, it was a proper.
It's a swinger if an Arsenal player does it, but we'll say it's a great goal.
Yeah, that was great. All right, let's do Dan. You gave us a question which I quite like. On the 10th year anniversary of Twitter, what is your favourite/most memorable moment from Spurs Twitter? I mean, it's been loads, of course.
It's because Twitter was doing your favourite Twitter moment today.
Yeah. Can I say the least favourite moment?
Yes.
The people that came up with Bayern Hotspur in 2012, just before the cup.
That was before my time on Twitter.
It was very much
that was bad.
During my time. There was people changing their avis to it and stuff. I mean, that is a climb down when you have to change that and it hasn't happened. Everyone's so confident. Yeah, that was least favourite. I liked Dyer replying to Trunk when he asked him, how do you pronounce your name? Mm. When we realised he wasn't just going to be kind of a backup, he was going to be playing a few games. And so this beginning of last season, maybe after he scored against
West Ham,
actually, and he said, is it Dyer or
Dyer
or something like that? And he just came back with one word, just Dyer. That's all it was. It was like, yeah! It was great. I enjoyed that. That was nice.
My favourite Spurs account Twitter moment was definitely when the guy accidentally tweeted the Liverpool losing to Palace tweet from the Spurs account.
Right.
You know, the vine of when Gerrard's like, this doesn't slip now! And then he slips, and then Suarez scores
and
Palace
then
and get
laughs.
Those three. Pulis laughs. And the guy had accidentally tweeted it from the Spurs official account as opposed to his own.
Amazing.
That was brilliant.
Did he survive?
Yeah, people were claiming
don't think
that
he did.
Was that pre your mate then?
Yes.
Do you know the guy that's.
Yeah, it was pre. It was pre.
Oh, that's amazing.
He obviously just had both accounts on his phone.
Yeah, got like both accounts on his phone.
Yeah.
And the retraction was, our Vine has been hacked. So it was just, the whole thing was great.
The tweet was like, biggest collapse since. It was just like, it was a really like well-written tweet about how Liverpool just completely thrown it. It wasn't just the post of the Vine, like the caption was like, really hard-hitting.
Yeah, it deserved numbers. And to be deleted, you just felt...
But you might as well just hold your hands up there. Don't say the whole
thing. The thing is, some clubs do a bit of banter, don't they? The Spurs is a very corporate message. Yeah. Or at least it certainly was.
Yeah, it's better.
At that time it was, for sure.
It's got a lot more lighthearted in the last couple of years and a lot better, but at that time it was very much sort of corporate mouthpiece.
And then
suddenly this retweet.
We'd lose like 3-0 to West Ham, and then literally the next tweet would be like, we've signed a new sports kit manufacturer in Korea or something like that.
It's like United, what was United's announcement last
Noodles.
Week?
Oh, yeah.
United have got
new oil supplier.
Six more sponsorship deals this season than they have Premier League points. It's amazing.
Wow. Not just on United and advertising. Have you ever seen that advert where they advertise tomato juice in Japan? If you've not seen it, go and watch it, because if you think Giggs is wooden speaking English, you've never seen anything like it. He speaks Japanese, and it's a video of him, Carrick, and I think Jason Park drinking tomato juice, looking to the camera, saying something in Japanese, and then just giving a really cheesy smile.
Are you sure it wasn't Kagawa? It's Japanese.
Oh, that's really racist of him. He used to play for us, didn't he?
Yeah, it might
be Kagawa. That's unfortunate. There was me taking the piss.
If this was supposed to be deleting the pod, our pod had been hacked by some wild racist.
My brain has been hacked, by the brain of my father, apparently, or grandfather. anyone else have any... favourite Twitter moments? Quickly, please.
There was, when they introduced Fazio walking up and down the corridor, that was a bit strange.
Tottenham Turfies!
Tottenham Turfies!
They spent like a week saying there's a big announcement coming. It was in the transfer window.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, oh, what's this? This is really strange. Spurs don't do this.
That is shameful.
And it was like, there's a new game for your children.
That was a week before the season started as well, I think. That was shameful. Marketing at its very worst/best, I suppose. I really like Billy T's. Obviously, got a catalogue of Spurs tweets, but one of my favourites was Liverpool saying they won't do a Spurs is more Spurs than anything Spurs have ever done. Liverpool doing a Spurs. That still gets retweeted, and it's got like 10,000 retweets now.
They're still doing a Spurs.
Yeah. Exactly, it's never going to not be funny as well.
Yeah, I'm really struggling.
Also, his replica of the Labour Stone.
Yeah.
Was absolutely brilliant.
Incredible.
That's another thing on like the great Twitter moments are sometimes the worst moments for Spurs. Because that's when Twitter's really entertaining.
Yeah.
So for me, the best was when Spurs and the Blood decided that he would make up that Tim Sherwood had punched someone in the dressing room after Liverpool away.
Was that from him, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was like, I saw it somewhere else on Twitter where people were questioning him. If you just search Sherwood punch, there was nothing before he tweeted it.
But it's genius. He's done like amazing work. But yeah, it shows the character of Sherwood and our thoughts on Sherwood that everyone was like,
could have done it.
Yeah, actually, that sounds about right. I'd say, that was a good one. I like that question, Dan. You should give us more questions.
Thanks. I didn't actually answer it myself, but that's okay because
you had all day to think about it.
I know. I can't think of anything.
It's good.
I love everyone dearly though. I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah,
it's great.
No peaks and troughs. It's just all good, all on the level.
Terrific stuff. Yeah. All right. I think that's pretty much all we've got time for this week. Dan, you wanted to put an appeal out, didn't you?
I haven't written that on the running order yet. But I've forgotten all about it until just now. Yeah, what I want to do is because of my day job now, I don't have time to run the Tottenham Way, and I want to get more people involved or find someone who's going to be able to do it, and ideally someone who wants to write about Spurs, is interested in journalism or blogging and is passionate about Spurs and wants to do some writing, and they might get paid a little bit, but not very much. So if that's you, then get in touch on Twitter at the Tottenham Way or email me editor@thetottenhamway.com. I'd like to hear from you.
Cool. Thank you so much, Adam, for letting us use your pleasure. Front room. It's been great. It's been really comfortable. We've got a nice L-shaped sofa, which is perfect for us, as we have to sit in a panel.
We didn't do a test, though, so this
we did do a test.
Oh, we did?
I did do a test, yeah.
Oh, okay, so
those are the lost tapes.
Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Those are the B-sides that you'll never hear. like all the bit that I have to edit out at the beginning, which is usually where all the swearing is.
And the Park G-Song part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Leave it in, it's fine.
Yeah, it'll stay in.
You just get like a computer voice saying, Kagawa is the part of the song, and that bit. It'd be great.
That could work, actually. I'll have a look into that. No, thanks very much, Adam. Ben, nice to see you, mate. We'll see you on before the end of the season. We're hoping to do a big mass season ender, aren't we, with everyone.
Open top bus.
We are, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get our own bus. Or just get a mini bus. Just hang out the window.
Or just the London.
London bus.
Yeah, and top tourist bus.
Great stuff. Budget. Pound and Hand Trophy Parade. That's it from the Tottenham Way podcast this week. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week for... we need to think of a special, don't we? Because it's international break.
Oh, yeah, we do.
We'll think about it in a week. If anyone's got any suggestions, email us, I suppose.
It's got to be the Sherwood special.
It's fair, yeah. All right, thank you very much. Come on, you Spurs.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.